All right, hour two of the Lake Show. And I told you that we would have Jeff Hayden, former senator here in the great state of Minnesota, joining us to talk politics here. First off, this it's been a while since we had you in studio. Happy. I know that we shouldn't be saying Happy New Year. I know that it's the 14th, but this is the first time I've seen you here in the new year. Right. So I'm going to say Happy New Year.
Happy
How you
New
been,
year.
Man?
Man, I'm doing good. I'm doing good. It's a fresh year. It's cold outside. The legislature is in kind of in session.
Yes.
So it's my time of year. I'm ready for it. I'm here for it.
And that's where we want to start. We're going to get to Pete Hegseth a little bit later. But definitely this segment, I want to ask you about what's going on. Minnesota House Democrats, they boycott the first day of the session. Kind of walk people through the dynamics of the first day of the legislative session, typically, and what's going on specifically this year, the way it's set up.
Yeah, normally what would happen is this is the first year of a biennium, meaning that the Minnesota, the way that the legislature set up their bienniums, their two-year budget process, and the House of Representatives get elected every 2 years. Minnesota Senate gets elected every 4 years, with the exception of the redistricting year. Then the Minnesota Senate has a two-year term and then goes back to 4 years.
Okay.
So we're just right in the middle of the Senate's term, which was 4 years. We're halfway through, and we're in a new biennium. So that meant that all 134 House members were up for election.
Okay.
So the governor's office and the what we call the constitutional officers, as Secretary of State, State Auditor, Attorney General, and the governor and Lieutenant Governor, weren't up for election. So this year, long, you know, we got the national stuff. We saw the election between Vice President Harris and President-elect Trump. The Minnesota House is up for election. So an extraordinary thing happened. It's only happened once ever in the state's history.
In history, yeah.
Is that the voters went to the polls and they came back with 67. There's 134 House members, House of Representative members. They came back with 67 Democrats and 67 Republicans in the House. So that was a tie, not a virtual tie, a tie. So they started to say, uh-oh, well, what do we do here? Only happened in 1979 where they had this tie. They went through this power-sharing agreement. This year, the two leaders, Speaker Hortman, or former Speaker Hortman, Melissa Hortman from Brooklyn Park, and then the leaders of the Republicans is the woman by the name of Lisa Daymuth. And so she is either the speaker or the speaker designate. We'll get into that.
Yep.
But let's just call both of them the Democratic and Republican leaders. They came up with a strategy that said, you know what? Let's share. Let's be novel. Let's do it right. We'll co-share our speakerships. We're going to co-share all of the committee chairs.
Because it seems fair.
It seems fair because it's 67-67. And we're going to make each committee, which is really important, you know, Department of Health and Human Service, or the Transportation Committee, the Agriculture Committee, the Economic Development Committee. Let's make them even amount of members on the committee, and we'll make them co-chairs. And then we'll figure out, are we going to have a day that the Republicans hear the bills, a day the Democrats? But anyway, it goes, you're going to have to – you'll be able to hear the things that you think are important. And at some point, you're going to have to get to the House floor. And this is really important here. To pass a bill on the House floor, you need 68 votes. So that's one more than the majority.
Yep.
In the Senate, there is there's an odd number there. So you need 34, right? So there's 67 senators, 134 House members. So that was going along fine. There was a little caveat to that, though, a couple. One was the Republicans said, hey, there's a guy named Curtis Johnson out in Maplewood. We've been watching this cat. And he used to live in Little Canada for many years, well-known person out in the community, very well-known politically. And he said, yeah, I'm going to move into the district.
So now it's a residence issue. Yes.
So he says that's what he did. He goes and gets a lease. Folk watch him and said, nah, I think the brother still lives out in Little Canada. So they watched him, surveilled him. He wins the election. It's a Democratic district by a lot, like 30 points. The Republican said, nah, the residency requirement said that you must live in the district 6 months prior to you running. And if you're in the Senate, it's a year. They said, nah, he ain't. He's still living at home. They take it to court. The judge agrees with the Republican.
Yep.
Doug says, nah, I'm looking at all the evidence, and it don't look like you established residence, and there's utilities, and there's watching his house, whatever. You can read the court case if you need to. So he could have appealed that to the Supreme Court, but he said, you know what, I'm
cool.
He was
cool. Like, you got me. Yeah, I'm out. Yeah, you got me. And I looked at that, and we talked about that here on the show, and we're like, yeah, it just makes sense. It seems like everything wasn't on the up and up.
Went on up and up. So immediately there's a vacancy. The governor then called for a special election, mm-hmm. which actually the primary was today, and then the general election will be at the end of the month. A couple things with that. One, it's a Democratic district, so it's liable to be back to be a Democrat. But that created a 67-66 advantage for the Republicans. For the time being, temporarily.
Yep. Yep.
But by the end of the month, everybody knows that that district that's on the east side of St. Paul, Maplewood, has been heavily Democratic. So the Republicans say, hey, we got an advantage here. We got some time. So we're going to, and by the time the legislative session starts, which was today, we'll still have the advantage. So now we good on that, power sharing agreement. We got the advantage. We're going to elect the speaker. We're going to elect our chairs of our committees. There's a little bit of a problem with that. The Constitution, at least from Secretary Simon, who is the convener, mm-hmm. the initial convener of the legislature before they elect their leaders, he said you need 68 votes. So the Democrats, including Secretary Simon, said the Constitution is clear. From their perspective, you need 68 votes to elect a speaker, just like you did for law.
And the Republicans dispute that. And they said that's not true.
They said,
right?
No, that's not true. They said we have an organizational majority.
Yep.
And all we need is just the votes. So they go back and forth.
They're at odds with Secretary Simon, right?
They're at odds, Secretary Simon. So Speaker Hortman, former Speaker Hortman, the Democratic leader, she said, hey, I don't like the way that this is sounding. Plus, there was an election down in Shakopee where Representative Tabke, who was the incumbent, won by 14 votes. But there was a discrepancy, 20 votes of those.
Because there was some 20.
20 of those votes were thrown out
yep.
accidentally.
But now the judge has said they're good.
So Republicans sued on that.
Okay.
So on the one side, the Republicans win on the issue in Maplewood.
Yep.
To strike this. And then they lose on this. So what happens is they go and they are intimating that they don't believe that the judge has standing to seat a member. Only they do. That the judge's ruling is advisory. So they've indicated that even when they got there, they were going to vote to put Brad Tabke out, Representative Tabke, and to expel him, which triggers a special election and do it all over again. So the speaker says, I got two problems. One, looks like you're going to try to get a majority and elect a speaker, the Democratic leader, the former speaker, that you're going to try to get an advantage and vote somebody in without the votes. And secondly, you're going to expel my guy who the judge says that he believes that he won.
Mm-hmm.
Here's what a dilemma is for me, and everybody knows kind of what side of the aisle I'm on. I'm a former Democratic leader, so I'll just say it for the record.
Yep.
But let me just try to be as objective as possible. If I sue, whatever the judge says is what I should do.
Yep.
So I can't be on one side saying, yep, he's right on with that seat when the Democrats lost.
Yep.
And then
But
then come on down to Shakopee, and I don't like what it is. And I say, nah, I ain't abiding by that.
Yeah,
I'm not abiding by that.
I can't ride with that either. I'm glad you went there because that's where I was going. Because even before the guy stepped away and said, me and Chris both talked about this on air, and we were like, nah, this seems shaky. It seems as though this person actually didn't have a real residency there. Seems like they were kind of faking it. So I'm sorry. I mean, I might be Democratic in most times when I'm voting and where my allegiances are in terms of like how I align with. I say I can't ride.
What's
with
right
this.
Is right and wrong is wrong.
Exactly.
Right, but that has to work on both sides of the table.
Agreed.
I was looking at your shirt. You know, my aunt, you say what's good for the goose is good for the gander. I'm like, what's a gander? But anyway, that being said, you know what I'm saying?
Yep.
So today was dramatic. And I can get to the Senate a little less dramatic. So all the Republicans showed up, 67. None of the Democrats. The Democrats, by the way, swore themselves in on Sunday night.
Over the weekend, yep.
Over the weekend. Nobody knew about it. It's kind of a problem. But that being said, they swore themselves in, but they didn't show up. So they weren't on the board to vote. So Secretary Simon took the role. There was only 67. He believes it needs to be 68 to make this, to have the House duly organized.
Yep.
Then they can go and elect who they want. He goes on back to his office. He finds that the House does not have a quorum. Quorum means you got to have enough people to have a meeting.
Yep.
If you're on your Boy Scout, Girl Scout board all the way to the House of Representatives, you got to have a certain amount of people to make the meeting legit. So the Republicans say, no, we ain't doing that. They let Secretary Simon come off the roster. They walked up their oldest member, Representative Anderson, and they started their own proceedings, went forward to take the role, and then elected Lisa Damon from the eastern part of St. Cloud as their new Speaker of the House, in which the Democrats cried foul, said it's unconstitutional. You should expect to see them have a lawsuit expeditiously and have it expedited to the Supreme Court. So now here we sit. And it's kind of like two worlds, right? Like if you're a Marvel dude, it's like the Red Hawk and the Green Hawk, right? Like it's one group that says that they're elected, they're going to go about their business. It's another equally as powerful group said that this isn't okay. So we're living in a kind of a parallel universe at this moment.
All right. So if you can, in 60 seconds before we go to our first break, what is the next, like, what's the next step for us to kind of, because this is kind of a little bit of a maze, and we have to kind of, it's a little bit of a winding road.
Totally unprecedented.
So what is the next thing that we have to be following and tracking and paying attention to?
Well, the big issue is, one, that the Republicans are going to show up. The secretary is going to show up again and count them if they let them in the door and say still doesn't believe that they can organize. Republicans are going to show up and start doing business. Right. The next thing that they potentially could do is send this issue of Representative Tabke's election to what they call a rules committee. That rules committee could make a recommendation to expel him. It's got to go back up to the speaker and go through a process. But they look like, and they've been signaling that that's what they're going to do, which will make the margin even more. Right. So the next thing to do is to watch that. The Democrats are going to stay home in their districts, still continue to do their work, meet with their constituents. But they said they're not showing up until they can get some either an agreement from the Republicans or they get some guidance or an order from the Supreme Court, who's often reluctant to get involved with legislative business.
Can we just be honest for a second? None of this helps the people of Minnesota, right?
None of this is helping the people of Minnesota. People of Minnesota expect that as a former member, they expect for me to get my tail up here in January and get to work and do the things that they need for me to do.
Yep.
So the Senate is organized, and we can get into that in the next segment. They're organized. They had a problem. A former Senator, Kerry Disick, passed away.
Yep.
They're having their own special election today, but they decided to have the power-sharing agreement until they got to the majority of folks, which would be at the end of the month. So they're kind of okay.
And that was with Jeremy Miller and Bobby Joe Champion,
right? Jeremy Miller and Bobby Joe Champion. Yep. They'll, till the end of the month, they presume, because it's northeast Minneapolis, southeast Minneapolis, and the University of Minnesota, heavily Democratic. So whoever comes out of that election, and I should probably look, polls are probably just closed. Whoever comes out of that is likely to be the next senator in north to southeast Minneapolis, who will be a Democrat, and then we'll put the Democrats in control in the Senate. There is a caveat to that, though,
okay. And
it is Senator Nicole Mitchell. And
she's trying to get
the
hearing.
She's the one that's trying to get the hearing moved. She was accused of breaking into her stepmother's house and this whole issue. And her trial is expected to start January 27th. She's trying to get that moved to May so that it doesn't interfere with the legislative session.
No question. All right, Jeff Hayden joining us in studio. We'll take a break. We'll come back. Want to talk about Pete Hegseth as well. We'll do that next year on The Late Show. All righty, we got Jeff Hayden joining us in studio talking politics. A couple other things that we want to talk to with the former Minnesota senator. And where we left off, get back to the Senate. You wanted to mention something
absolutely.
And clear something up before we get to Pete Hess.
So what happened in the Senate was, unfortunately, my good friend, former leader Kerry Disick, passed away of cancer right over the holidays. So they went to 30. They were 34, 33 Democrats. They went to 33-33. Majority Leader Murphy, Minority Leader Johnson, the Republican, Senator Champion, and other more senior members got together and said, we don't really like what's going on in the House. This is probably going to be another Democratic seat. So what they did is they spent the next 3 weeks just co-leading, getting through the Senate business, getting through some of the things that they have. By the end of the month, it should be back to a 34-33 Democratic lead. Now, there is this caveat of Senator Mitchell from Woodbury that either that's asking for a continuance of her trial to come after the session, or it could happen at the end of January, in which she won't be able to be present to vote on anything. So that could put a little bit of a change there. And if for some reason she was found, so, you know, she's being adjudicated. If she's innocent, she'll probably come back and be fine. If she's found guilty, then there is a mechanism to expel her under kind of moral turpitude kind of stuff. Big, big, big words in the statute that she'll probably either resign or be expelled. Now she has to go through the process, and I believe that we should do it. So that's the Minnesota Senate, but they seem, and I've been in both bodies, but they call themselves the higher body, the upper body for a reason. They seem to have themselves a little more kind of engaged on making sure
they got more
that they're
order.
Working. Yeah, yeah, and they got more work. So I know we wanted to try to transition just a little bit into what's going on nationally.
Yeah, nationally, what were your takeaways from the hearing today with Pete Hegseth?
Yeah, it was rough. Everything from his
– it depends on who you talk to. Some people feel like he didn't have that bad of a day.
Yeah, I mean, I think from my perspective, from the moral issues that people talked about, I know, you know, people are human beings, and I know that I don't really want all my private stuff aired out over time. It looked like he had a lot going on from, you know, addiction issues that I think he's taking care of, or at least, I don't know if he's admitted he's addicted, but alcohol issues to issues in his personal life, but also issues about his competency, and did he understand the job, and did he understand the regions and all the various alliances? I know Senator Duckworth talked about it. He particularly took it hard from women around combat and where they combat eligibly, especially from Senator Duckworth, who like has no legs, right? And I think a half an arm because in combat she got injured. You know, on the flip hand side, and then the other issue of he was a major in the National Guard, and typically people in those positions are generals and have been generals for a long time in like the actual military, or not that the Guard. Let me be careful, my guardsmen. But active duty military, I guess is what I'll say. Now, on the flip hand side, if you're looking for somebody who's going to shake things up, if you're looking for somebody who really going to give you kind of red meat, full-blooded machismo, and is very good friends with the president, then, you know, he is a media person like yourself, Lake, so he knows how to handle himself in front of a microphone. And so from that perspective, I thought that he did a good job. He didn't break. I don't know if I did a good job, but the questions that he had and his inability to answer some of the basic questions and some of the things that come to light about his character, I thought was pretty tough.
Well, one of the things, and this is one of the statements that came up with Senator Tammy Duckworth from Illinois. She says, we asked troops to man that ship, fight that fire, fly that helicopter, and to do and to their very last breath. And they do that every single day. They cannot be led by someone who is not competent to do the job. Also, something that came up was about an audit. And she asked a direct question about the audit with something about a discrepancy with some veteran stuff.
Yeah, like, yeah.
And to me, those direct questions, he kept trying to tiptoe around it and wasn't direct with his answers.
Yeah.
That was a little bit, it didn't come across good.
You know, I spent a little time in the late 80s in the military.
She said yes or no, and he would never get to it.
Yeah, and I didn't, I didn't see combat. You know, I don't talk about it in a way of God bless the, you know, the folks that have been, you know, when the bullets are coming back on the other way, like it's real, right? And so, but let me say this, all of the officers that I serve with, the non-commissioned officers, the sergeants, the tech sergeants, the generals, commanders, colonels, like these people are of high, high integrity and have a lot of experience, and they're really highly competent individuals. It appears to me that, you know, Mr. Hegseth, you know, I think rose to the ranks of major, which is not bad, in the National Guard, the DC National Guard, the Minnesota National Guard. Once again, wonderful organizations. Glad you're here. They do a lot of kind of stuff. I don't know if even that in of itself, much less his moral issues that are being brought out, it, does that get him to lead the military as a whole? We're talking 3- and 4-star generals. The Secretary of the Air Force right now, who's running it, is a 4-star general, happens to be an African American guy who flew F-18s in Iraq. I mean, you know what I mean? Like these types of Colin Powell type people, right? And it just doesn't look like that Hegseth's there. It looks like he's there because he was on Fox News, spoke really highly of the president, and had some really kind of, you know, I would say, you know, at best, sexist things about the way he feels about women in combat. And I think that's where Tammy Duckworth took offense to it, is that they believe, and I do too, I believe that women can be in combat as long as the same kind of strategy, you can lift the same amount of weight, march the same, you can get in the plane and figure out how to fly it and do your work. I think that we should be able to have everybody serve. And I think he suggested that a lot of people who are serving right now and who have served shouldn't serve because they're not male.
Mm. Yeah, I don't like that. I don't like that for 1 second. But it's going to be interesting. Well, it's hard to gauge or make a guess as to whether he's going to get confirmed or not. But how would you describe how it looks right now?
Well, I mean, I think that this is a real test for the president. So the issue is, like, they're going to go over his qualifications. But at the end of that, it doesn't really matter if the senators that the Republican senators have made up their mind and they're going to and they're going to push him forward. That's the process. So if they're looking the other way, or they said we owe the president this, or it's okay, or we want somebody outside the box, or whatever way in which you talk, irrationalize yourself. But or, you know, listen, I don't want to get on the balance side of the president, Elon Musk, and all these cats that are walking around here threatening people, literally threatening people if they don't do what the president says, that they can look up and have a primary in their own party. Like, there's a whole bunch of things going on behind the scenes that get people there. What I would hope is that when I raise my hand to the Constitution to say I'm going to do the best that I can do to the best of my ability, I hope that they remember that. Yeah. I hope that they don't let the pressure get to them. I hope that they say, you know what, is this gentleman, is he qualified? And they got to do that for all of the folks that the president, you know, they get the consent, right, to push forward, and they nominate and they can consent or dissent. And I hope that everybody takes a really good look at these cabinet positions, because they're extremely important, especially right now, and make sure that they're getting the right guy.
I just, you know, what Hegseth, to think that he could be over the biggest, essentially, department. I mean, that part, I think people got to be real careful with. I mean, that's a lot of money.
Yeah.
That's a big, I mean, that's a big job.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, listen, like you probably could do a good job being the chairman of the FCC, right? Like, I mean, you know what you're doing. You've been behind the microphone a lot of times. But, like, you know, we'd have to check that out. That's a big job, right? It's a lot of stuff going on. And it is, and I don't mean that, like, this is an important job that you guys do. This is really, really important to get the information out there. But we're talking about large bureaucracies, right? And in particular in the defense, like, we are asking mostly young men and women to put themselves in harm's way. And sometimes the best thing is that you go there and you don't come back. But a lot of folks we see in the commercials, they come back with half limbs and arms and traumatic brain injuries. They're never the same again. And we're asking them to do that. And the person who leads them should be a competent individual that we know. Right. Not just, you know, and he'll tell you, I got over to Iraq a few times, but this should be somebody that we know that when they're advising the commander in chief, it's the president, on where we should deploy our resources, which are people, young men and young women.
Yep.
When we're deciding to do that, that person's competent.
When we need somebody to break it down, we bring Jeff Hayden into the mix, and he's done a phenomenal job for the last 30 minutes. Hey, Jeff, man, let's do it again soon.
Anytime.
Silton's going to be back in studio in the next couple of days.
Yeah, call Stevie, man. That's my boy. Ha ha ha.